So be this surprise, big or small, Brilliant Metals, we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, Brilliant Metals, we have
it all. Brilliant Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tech Sunday. Before the break, I was just throwing out something very hypothetical. Should we be looking at another 8% cut or 10% cut or 5% cut in wages? I don't know. Who wants to say this? You go with the young economist first.
All right. Sure. I'll take it first. Well, if you start out from a numbers perspective, you can achieve the same objective either way, right? The challenge, though, is that, the question is, what is the problem? If you look at some of the entities, whether it be in these state-owned entities or the central government, if you argue that there are too many numbers there regardless, even if you're going to pay more, it might be better to, as Marla said, allocate some of those persons to the private sector when the economy gets to grow a bit faster, because you'll need those hands on deck. If the economy starts to grow and, you know, there are more tourists coming and there are more industries, there will be a demand for labor. So I think while that could be a potential short-term measure to more or less balance the books, so to speak, and I know we don't want to just, you know, get to a number, I think in the long run, what you want to have is you want to have wage growth. You want to have people earning more so that they can spend more, but then you want to be able to shift some of that labor into the private sector so they can satisfy the demands for more exports and things like that, or being able to produce more for exports, etc. But I'll let Dr. Bell touch on the political.
It's a week or a week and a half ago, we have gone through an election in which there was an answer to all of these kinds of discussions that I'm hearing resurrected now about cuts and restriction of the economy. We have seen the results of policies that were struggling to do that, and people who were trying to convince somebody that this was the way to go, and all it has done is to reduce the economy and to cause everybody to suffer. And the people decisively rejected it. Every seat of the past government was lost. I don't know if you could want a harsher and firmer statement that is not what Barbadians want. We know that if you keep cutting, you're going to keep almost like creating a cannibalistic economy, and you're going into yourself. And that's what we have experienced. I believe that a firm and clear look at the state-owned enterprises, that is where we probably have to concentrate with some energy now, and to see how we can adjust those as quickly as possible. And I would say, yes, go to see if some of them can go into a private sector in order to try to not to hurt as many people as could be if you carry out serious reforms there. But I think that is the area that seems to be less justified in its persistence. But we have been having cuts for the last 10 years. People have not had a wage increase in the public service and beyond for 10 years. So those are cuts. The other thing that we have to recognize is the issue of power relations. And this has been a global thing as well. It has happened in some of the big countries that caused the economic crisis internationally initially. Anyway, and the big people in the economy, said that they were not going to sacrifice, that even though they caused the crisis, that the small people will sacrifice. And they have. And it is to do with the power relations in the political economy that dominates global economics. The people at the bottom, who are the poor people, are also the weaker people, less able to defend themselves. And therefore, you can take it out on them. And somebody like Warren Buffett says that, and he's one of the more enlightened capitalists in the world. He says that this is a class struggle and we are winning, meaning the people at top. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't say that in the kind of vicious way that other people might say. He says it in a kind of objective thing on the basis of recognizing the realities of power relations. I think if a government is coming in at this stage in our history, in our experience, we have to start to take into account again, how do we remanage these power relations so that people at the bottom who have been carrying the burden of the recovery do not even carry a further burden because it's easy to pass it on to them. I think we have some lazy analyses that are going on because it is, you can make a conclusion like that, you can make a statement like that and get away with it because nobody immediately around you to pelt a rock at you. Mm-hmm. But eventually, if you carry this too far, they will run, come for you and pelt the rocks. Remember that Jamaica went through a whole heap of this IMF thing when he bought the old bad IMF in the 80s. They also went through a lot of murders, a lot of death, a lot of violence, which they haven't recovered from fully either. So you can create that side. I don't think Barbados will ever get as bad as that. But it can get bad in relation to what Barbadians want to live in terms of having bad reactions from people who feel powerless and hopeless and live in despair. Mm-hmm. And therefore, with that in your understanding, you have to try to think about new economics, new modeling, new views on development, new ways of going forward. You're always talking here in this talk about innovation. Let me have some innovation in thought.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bell. Jeremy and Marla on the line. What does all this mean for the attempts by the trade unions to get an increase in salary? Because as Dr. Bell pointed out, most Barbadians have not had a salary increase in public service, certainly, for nearly 10 years. Your thoughts? Well, ladies first, of course, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
Marla, go ahead.
Thank you. So it is the job of the trade union leader to try to get higher wages and better conditions for its members. Not so. But, you know, the thing is, part of the problem of why we are where we are in terms of the fiscal deficit being where it is and having had the spin-off effects on the reserves that it has had is because there are inefficiencies in the public sector created by, partly by too many unproductive or inefficient jobs in the public sector. So I don't disagree fundamentally with a demand for higher wages, but those people have to be productive. They have, in other words, we have to boost productivity in the public sector for these higher wages to be justified. How do you boost productivity in the public sector? We need sweeping and deep public sector reform. In other words, the public sector cannot continue to do business the way it has been, mostly manually. For example, so many of the processes within the public sector need to be automated and computerized, for example, to help to make the public sector more productive and more efficient. You would have seen in the government, the current government's manifesto, that there was a lot of attention paid to this issue and things like making sure that payments can be made online for things like traffic ticket offenses, all the way down to license applications and fees and taxes and so on. So in other words, this government has adopted an e-government drive, if you will, which I think is very appropriate and will help to make the public sector more efficient, more productive, and help to make the Barbados economy more competitive internationally. And that's where I think the trade unions need to focus their attention on. How do we help public sector reforms to be put through quickly and have the desired effect in as short as possible a time frame so that the public sector becomes more productive and more efficient, and therefore when the economy becomes more competitive and more revenue is earned by the economy of Barbados, then you can easily justify an increase in public sector wages.
Jeremy, you want to tackle that before we go to some calls? We have a whole
slate. Man, there's nothing to tackle. Cause anytime I talk about what the unrealistic demands that the union were making, I got cut. And I guess it sounded better coming out of Marla's mouth this time as well. So, but I hold a similar view. I very, very quickly believe that no economist I know could disagree with the following, that if a government is not going to increase its burden on the economy, but by taxation, that it holds rates constant, let's assume that tax rates constant and whatnot, that the only way it can get more tax revenue to afford the increase in wages, assuming it holds the public sector to be the same size, is on the back end of an economic expansion. That is, the economy has to grow first, right? One comes from that position, that there's a clear line between increases in wages and the performance of an economy. In the meantime, government has, as Marla said, to do some serious reforms. And no matter how we I guess, beautify the words or simplify the statements, any increases in efficiency or any forms of use of technology, simplification of processes, involves consolidation. Or in other words, as far as I'm concerned, some form of job losses. So, I mean, like my former team, I can wax political about why people should not lose jobs. But in the near term, no matter how you look at it, if it is that the public sector's inefficiency has been the drag on the economy, and not necessarily the private sector, because, again, you can limit, unless you have a dictatorship, you can't limit how, or shouldn't go about trying to limit how the private sector invests wholesale. Again, I say this word wholesale. So as far as I'm concerned, Marla said it very correctly. You have to start with the rationalization within the public sector. Her words were improvements in public sector reform. I'm sorry, public sector reform and improvements in efficiency, which in my view, and I will say it, calls for rationalization on the other end of the spectrum and the short-term losses of jobs, no matter how you look at it. Jane said earlier that you would hope that the private sector are incentivized to invest because of the confidence we speak about. And then in a year or two, if God allows it, you get some kind of movement from the public sector into the private sector, and for the meantime, our worst fears are over. But again, it comes down to now the willingness of the unions to realize the reality of the situation. If it was that the 23% that they were pushing the last 2 years wasn't politicized, I'll say that.
All right, let's go to our phone lines. We've got the whole board laid up. You're on Brass Tack Sunday. Good
Hello.
Morning. Good afternoon, sorry.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yeah. I've listened to all the speakers thus far, and the only one I can say that I agree with in terms of the orientation is Dr. Bell. I think that we are limiting ourselves by looking at everything in a very narrow focus in terms of jobs, job numbers, or decrease cuts in salaries and all sorts of things like that. We have to view the thing in a macro perspective. And there are ways in which savings can be affected, not only restructuring the debt. If the debt is restructured, there can be a savings in interest payments and also savings in foreign exchange. We need to have the private sector involved, and for the private sector to begin to do a lot of the heavy lifting in the tripartite arrangement. Those are discussions that should be held with them. For example, in the automotive industry, how much money have we, foreign exchange, have we sent abroad with the people in the private sector in the garage industry earning, as it were, easy money just by importing vehicles and getting a percentage off the top? We can use the people from the Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic who are trained to help to refurbish vehicles, update them, and things like that. We don't have any industry making motor vehicles. A former Prime Minister, Tom Adams, in the past had restricted the importation of private vehicles. He only allowed commercial vehicles for some period of time. That resulted in the savings. That same thing can happen. A lot of people buy vehicles because the public transportation system is bad. If we invest in the public transportation system, a lot of people would save hours, the hours that it takes to get to work. They can go back home early, probably work on a kitchen garden, and increase their productivity and their wealth and general well-being and the well-being of the whole country. As I said earlier, I agree with Dr. Bell's orientation with respect to the whole problem. You have to take a macro perspective of it and deal with it in that way, not from the bottom end up. But you see, the specialists treat the particular capsule of the economy as being separate. But when that is taken in by the body, the full body, it will affect everything else.
Thank you very much, sir, for your contribution. We go to another call. Good afternoon, you're on Brass Sack Sunday. Good afternoon, you're on Brass Sack Sunday.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, yeah. You're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing, sir?
I am fine, thank you.
And a good afternoon to your esteemed panel. I must say, with your caller there just now, and size with Dr. Ben. He was very definitive and clear. A lot of clarity is brought out. And then when he veered off into the regionalism, I must look at the aspect of the LEAD. They're sledging away for some years now in the input with the LEAD. So the regionalism is going to be impeded and hampered by that coming together, because if he's speaking regionalism, we're going to be speaking the movement of persons, et cetera, and that would be a chunk of our hindrance, because we know the kind of peril and problems that LEAD is faced with left, right, and center. But I must commend Dr. Bell for bringing it spelled out in a sequential way, 1, 2, 3, properly, that the average man in the street can understand. Like Dr. Dukeran talking about the private sector has got to 45, a lot of it, and in light of the maintaining sustainability and things, a lot of good stuff coming out, because these are experts. These are people very clear in their particular discipline, et cetera. So I think the whole program started with a good bang. And lastly, hope that this patient won't die in the process. I'm not pessimistic, but I'm realistic. If a patient is critically ill, that patient, there's the likelihood that that patient can die in the interim. But I'm hoping, being an optimist, that this won't happen with this patient, and y'all will have to keep fortifying, giving a good, strong analysis.
So just let me cross you. I just want, very briefly, can you tell me what would you like to see happen with Barbados? We're going to the IMF. Yeah. What would you like to see happen? What are your hopes?
I would hope that there's a package spelled out that, the gentleman was saying just now, the 8%, anything that I can do to assist in regard to keeping the impact from being very severe, I would like to see that happen. I know that we've got to do a lot of cutting and working together, as the old people say, cut and contrive. But it is going to be that the investors, which will be the IMF, is going to look for dividends on the investment. I am hoping that some compassion is rendered, but then the whole thing is about productivity. We cannot have the public sector getting massive wages and it's not commensurate to productivity. That is a serious, serious error. Now, who's going to get that turnaround? Is it Herculean task? Who would be the person to get that turnaround? All of the nice initiative and all that, some of these persons are hell-bent on not producing. And that is going to be very significant in going forward. So for Barbados, I would like to see everything work in unison for the better and are well thought out. There's a whole lot of other stuff I can say, but I will give some bias a chance, but I commend you all. And I am begging you all to stick with unify. Stick with it, look at it, and don't be reluctant to come forward and say, look, don't do that, but do this, because we've been through this properly.
All right, sir. Thank you. Yes, Jeremy, you were saying something.
First of all, I said something that I need to offer rebuttal to. Right? Now, I don't disagree or agree with his position with respect to Dr. Bell. But I do find it interesting that he spoke of to the savings from restructuring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think a lot of people, although he accused us of being narrow in focus, it's ironic that he was so narrow in his focus as well. Because although I agreed with restructuring years ago and whatnot, let me stick to... Hello?
Yeah, go right. You go ahead, Jeremy.
All right. Let me stick to one issue that he refused to bring to the table, and just to show that the tax savings, the interest savings that he's thinking about wouldn't necessarily help in isolation from other reforms that need to be done. Government, right, pays around $52 million in wages. And that was the issue that was printed for a number of years. That was $52 million created, added the money and all that. But if, for instance, we were to take the $15 billion in public debt that the country has on its shoulders, and we were able to notch off 1% because of restructuring. This is a very, very loose argument, right? But 1%. you would be able to get around, what, 10% would be $1.5 billion, 1% then more would be $150 million, right? Mm-hmm. $150 million. That isn't even enough in savings to fund our education ministry. We spend around $500 million a year. So if it is that we could knock off 1%, $150 million in interest, Barbados dollar interest, a year. That's not even enough to make a dent in funding education. So there has to be a lot more, because I don't think anybody will allow more than 1% or 2% or even 3% of savings, if there was any. And if you look at 3%, you're then at $450 million. You're now beginning to know you only deal with education and not the rest of social services. So people, if he's accusing us, the non-Dr. Bells, of being narrow, he needs to come with his numbers and come a lot better. It has to be a holistic approach of all across government, and people need to get the reality of it.
Yeah. So if I may, Sanka, I think we have to look at the problems we're trying to solve. So if we characterize the situation, Barbados has been experiencing low growth, falling reserves, and it has high debt. Now, the low growth, notwithstanding very good performance in tourism over the last 2 or 3 years, is due to a combination of very high taxes, which constrain people's ability to spend, and a poor investor confidence from the private sector, and that's primarily partially due to the credit rating. Okay, the credit rating now is linked to the debt and the fiscal deficit, and the falling reserves are also linked to the debt and the fiscal deficit. So this all seems to be pointing in the short term to a major issue, which is the size of the fiscal deficit. Now, cutting the interest expense in itself attacks the symptom, but not the problem. The debt is there because of persistent overspending relative to earning. And that persistent overspending relative to earning generated more debt, which means you had to pay more interest costs. So unless you fix that underlying issue, then you will get yourself back in this problem again. Now, I do agree with having to look at it from a wider perspective. Now, one of the areas that I've been speaking about is private investors in Barbados, not just being able to invest locally, but also in some of the other areas in the region. So I've always wondered, well, why can't an investor in Barbados own a farm in Guyana, right? You don't have to do it here. You can do it there. And you can take the dividends from that investment overseas and bring it back here. That speaks to regionalism as well. But to do that, you need to have the foreign exchange to invest overseas. And that is something we don't have. So I think we need to look at this from a wider perspective as well. And I fundamentally agree. And I think an IMF program is going to look at those structural issues. But I think we have to understand that with reserves at $400 million or so and falling, we need to attack the issue that has been causing that decline for the last 5 years. And that issue is the fiscal deficit. And if we're saying we're overtaxed and we can't take more taxes, then the other side of the equation has to be the recurring expenditure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, go ahead, Mara.
Hi. I completely agree with what Shane just said. And one of the other things that we need to acknowledge has a role to play in preserving the amount of foreign exchange reserves we have in Barbados, in addition to the confidence issue that I mentioned earlier, is the whole issue of foreign exchange controls and restrictions. And you would have seen that in the manifesto, there was a discussion around relaxing some of these foreign exchange controls and allowing private citizens and residents of Barbados to hold foreign currency accounts onshore. I think this is a very important reform that needs take place, and I think it will go a long way in supporting the kind of activity, regional activity and investing that Shane just spoke about, that I think can really help to transform the Barbados economy. If you can have people hold US dollars onshore as opposed to keeping it offshore, once there's confidence in the exchange rate and in the economy, people will, and Bahamas did this a few months ago, and it has worked out well so far. Foreign currency flows will come back onshore, and that will also help to shore up the level of reserves and help to maintain the exchange rate.
Marla, if I recall, you can correct me here, in Trinidad, you can have a foreign currency account, can't you?
Yes, that is true. Barbados and Bahamas will be two notable exceptions to the regional you know, a liberalization of the foreign exchange regime that took place over the past couple of decades, most of the time at the hands of an IMF program. Bahamas had started to relax theirs earlier this year, where they're allowing $100,000 U.S. dollars to be held on accounts by per person by residents in the Bahamas. And you would recall that the manifesto of the DLP contained similar measures.
Mm-hmm. And has it helped the Trinidad situation to be able to have foreign currency in a local account?
Well, in Trinidad right now, the deposit base in U.S. dollars is about 3.7 or so billion U.S. dollars. When you say it helps or doesn't help, I think you're referring to the fact that we have a foreign exchange management problem in Trinidad and Tobago, which is a whole separate issue. In my opinion, the authorities are mismanaging the foreign exchange regime. Where we have de facto controls and other controls that are, and other conditions that are not conducive to private sector activity or to a fairly valued exchange rate. But that's a whole other issue. Mm-hmm. The fact that in Barbados, residents cannot hold foreign currency accounts, obviously means that anybody who has US dollars, if there is no confidence, they would want to hold these U.S. dollars, but they can't hold it locally in an account, so they hold it under the mattress, which has its risks, or they hold it abroad. But if you allow for them to hold foreign currency deposits onshore in the banking sector, then I would imagine everybody who has foreign currency under the mattress, so to speak, will open an account and hold it there. And that has, based on reserve requirements and based on the way that the financial sector works, you end up having a boost in overall U.S. currency coming in and a boost in reserves at the central bank.
But what about fees, like bank fees? You know, in Barbados, we have all sorts of bank fees. So if I'm going to have a U.S. money in a Barbados account, and I'm just asking here in relation now to what happens in Trinidad and what you're aware of in the other territories. Would all those fees that the banks charge, will those become applicable as well?
Well, anytime you open an account in a bank, you're subject to fees, right? One of the things I will say about this is that one of the reasons why you might have seen fees increase in the banking sector in Barbados over the past couple of years is because the previous government instituted a tax on the assets of banks in Barbados, which is very unusual. I mean, in addition to them paying corporation tax on their profits, they have to pay a tax on their total assets, meaning the amount of loans and investments that they hold on their books. The banks are not going to absorb this new fee, or not new anymore, but this additional cost. They pass it on to their customers. So perhaps it's an opportunity for the new government to look at how banks are being taxed and to come up with a way that is not so punitive on the clients of the banks and the customers, which is pretty much everybody. And to allow for foreign currency accounts to be opened without the extent of punitive fees that we see in some jurisdictions, which can really be a disincentive to savings. So, for example, many countries have such high fees that people, generally ordinary people, are experiencing what is in effect negative interest rates.
Thank you very much, Marla. You're hearing the theme, so we have to take a break here for the latest, because it's 12:13 in just about a minute and a half. I'd just like to remind you that we will be right back after the latest. This program, of course, is brought to you with the compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christ Church, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.